This conference is being recorded.
So anything you say will be used against you.
Well, hopefully there will be other people that weren't able to make this time that might want to check it out later. Thank everybody that is joining us either at this time or later for participating in SACE's monthly brown bag webinars. And this recent development.
Steve Johnson.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. It's who?
This is Gil over at Southern Alliance for Clean Energy.
Oh, hey, Gil.
How you doing? Thanks for joining us today. I'm going to be muting everybody, so we'll be holding questions to the end. The call is being recorded, so the people click later on and join us.
I
appreciate everybody that's out there. I want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be starting in exactly 1 minute. All right, I think that we will, very sorry for starting a few minutes late. This webinar today, I think we've got everybody on here, is recent developments in the Southeast solar industry, and we will hope give a little snapshot of various things going on in the Southeast in various states. I won't claim to cover everything in the various states, but hopefully give you at least a feel for the main activities going on in states in the Southeast. My name is Gil Miller Huff. I'm the Tennessee Director of Renewable Programs at the Knoxville office. I'd like to thank everybody for attending today. Let me pop back here. PV is very actively growing in the U.S. And in the world. Largest markets are in Germany. Spain jumped out last year, and we're moving very aggressively everywhere at this time. Solar is not growing everywhere equally. Looking at utility lists from the Solar Energy Power Association, you can see the western, particularly the southwestern part of the United States, dominates the industry with some activity in the Northeast. These are 2008 numbers. You can see that in 2008, the Southeast was not really on the map when it came to solar energy, but there's a fair amount of growing activity just recently. Solar hot water is a little more distributed. Hawaii actually is the number one state in the United States, Florida and California, the other two, but there's a fair amount of activity across the nation when it comes to directly heating water for solar hot water systems. Most of my presentation today will focus on PV, but much of it would also be reflected in the growth of the solar hot water market. Larry Sherwood with the Interstate Renewable Energy Council is one of the few people in the nation who truly tracks the growth of solar energy. He calls me and he calls lots of people across to actually get hard numbers of growth. The New York Times article, he was quoted as saying he is expecting between 500 and 600 megawatts of solar power this year, which is twice the number for last year. So that'd be an incredible jump. Recently, he was actually new numbers from him, even more recent than the January 19th numbers, is he's actually expecting 700 to 900 megawatts of solar in 2010. Obviously, that is historic growth and would be remarkable. But if you start to see some of the activities going on in the states in the Southeast, and considering the Southeast in general has been behind in this market, you will see that there is an incredibly dynamic market going on. Now, just to get, before we jump into the various state pieces, I would like to say that knock the common myth that we all hear, Do we have enough solar here in Tennessee or in South Carolina or Georgia? Doesn't this work a lot better in Arizona or the desert somewhere? And the answer is yes, it does work better, but I prefer to compare the Southeast to where there's actually most of the solar is today. The largest amount of solar PV in the world today, the number one market is Germany. It far exceeds the entire United States. Yet, if you look at, and this map does, the solar resource, you will see that their resource is far less than we have here anywhere in the Southeast. Solar installers there would love to have the incredible solar resource that we do have in the Southeast. So does it work? Absolutely, it works fantastic. We have a wonderful resource for solar power here in the Southeast. The other big question you have is, well, yeah, but right now it's being heavily subsidized. Yes, that's true, but that is an intentional effort to scale up solar energy, to scale up the systems, to get a large enough manufacturing base built that will drive down the prices. There's nothing in the materials or there's nothing in the technology that requires it to be a when there's various projects have looked at this, various research papers, they can see very obvious trends as we have seen. In fact, this year we have seen tremendous reductions in prices, anywhere between 25% to 30% in panel prices this year. It is expected to be grid comparable to other generation sources by 2015, according to many studies, which is very exciting. If you're worried about the differences on this slide, there are many factors to when that solar will be grid comparable, where electricity is more expensive, where solar is a better other market factors. So in different parts of the United States, solar is expected to become grid comparable in price sooner than others. I'm not going to go too much into various state incentives. We could spend probably the entire webinar today simply talking about the incentives in each state. But there is a fantastic resource. If you're not familiar with it, I encourage you to go there with desireusa.org. They have a particular solar focus when you hit solar/solar. Make sure you do not put the E in desire. You will go to a different website. Spell that very carefully. So now let's look at Tennessee. This has been a very exciting year for Tennessee. With historic growth, both in installations and manufacturing, both the manufacturing we have and the manufacturing that's been announced in the last year, which is incredible, tremendous. Looking at some of the manufacturing, we've had AGC Solar. They make the specialty glass. About half the solar panel manufacturers use their glass in their panels. And they make that specialty glass in Kingsport, Tennessee. They have for some years, so that's been a piece that Tennessee has had for some time now. Sharp Solar opened up in 2002 and has consistently expanded in Memphis. And now we've had three other announcements for manufacturing here, so almost every Tennessee has now been affected by good, high-quality manufacturing jobs in the solar industry with Hemlock Semiconductor in Clarksville, Tennessee. They make the raw polysilicon that you need that is kind of the root stock for solar, which is very exciting. It's over $1 billion investment, I believe 1,000 jobs total. Various parts that will be supported by that manufacturing center. Very similar type product going on in Tennessee. It's Charlotte, Tennessee, but that's right outside Cleveland, which is just north of Chattanooga, with Vacker Chemie. Again, they make the $1 billion investment, very large investment into the state, making the raw polysilicon. And then just this past week or so, Confluent Solar announced for Clinton, Tennessee. Clinton is just north of Knoxville. And they will be taking the raw polysilicon material and creating a high-efficient monocrystal material out of it for some of those high-efficient solar panels that are made. When you look at some of the major installations, we have a good number of installations across the state. This is by no means all the installations. In Tennessee, I kind of cut it off at 20 kW. I'm sure I probably missed a few because they're popping up all over the place recently. Most of these are under 50 kW in the state because until very recently, PVA's Generation Partners Program that tied you in to the grid had a maximum of 50 kW to it, so you couldn't go any bigger than 50 kW. They have since raised that up to a megawatt, so there's a lot of larger installations now in development that I think we're going to see a lot larger scale development in Tennessee in the coming year or two. There's also a tremendous number of systems in the 20s because of a grant program here, the Tennessee Clean Energy Technology Grant, that maxed out at $75,000, 40% of cost. So that kind of makes an excellent argument for commercial businesses for systems in the 20s. And I have a few pictures there. That's just kind of a few miscellaneous pictures, including Sharp Solar on the top left. That's the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, 50 kW there on the top right, and Finley Stadium and a system in Middle Tennessee on a middle school. So I'm not going to try to go into the individual ones here, just kind of give you a case. A feel for the growth. Kind of looking at when you look at Tennessee, part of the excitement I think there is because we are now seeing robust growth in multiple sectors. As you can see, on the top is a list of the major manufacturers, and they kind of are a nice slice right across the entire manufacturing pie, from the raw polysilicon that you see on the left there, towards the crystallizing the module, the panel, or to the panel construction, module construction. Below that, you can see a couple of our more experienced NAPSEP certified PV installers, and there has been tremendous growth in the base here in Tennessee in the past year or so. Phenomenal growth. A couple of years ago, there was one business, Big Frog Mountain, and there has since been tremendous growth in this sector. We have three legitimate businesses simply here in the city of Knoxville now. Incredible growth. And to the far right there on the bottom, you will see that, in addition to the installer and the large-scale manufacturing, there are other component makers that are also growing here. Outpost Solar making some of the structure that you put this in, let's say in a parking lot situation, and Solar Pathfinder making the analyst equipment. We're checking your solar resource. So very exciting. So if you actually look at all the jobs seen here in our supply chain, it is a tremendous economic imprint that is now having on the state, and very exciting. One of the questions, of course, when we talk about recent developments in various states in the Southeast is how is the stimulus money being used? I will talk about stimulus funding in the various states. In Tennessee, we had $62.5 million of stimulus money. Governor Bredesen kind of capitalizing on the growth that he's seen in the manufacturing here in Tennessee and wanting to support the continued growth of the solar energy industry in the state of Tennessee, created a volunteer state solar initiative, which included both a Tennessee Solar Institute and a West Tennessee Solar Farm near Brownsville, Tennessee, which is a 5 MW. I have slides that go into bulk of these components a little more, so I'll just pop there. The West Tennessee Solar Array is being managed by a wholly owned subsidiary of UT Knoxville. called Genera Solar Solutions. You can see their timeline, a very aggressive timeline for building the 5-megawatt solar farm. The goals of it is to demonstrate utility-scale solar power in Tennessee. Really large-scale solar isn't something that we've seen previously, as you saw from the Tennessee slide. To educate the public on solar. In particular, it's going to be integrating a whole education center. Governor Bredesen sees this as, you know, UT Nashville has an ag extension that does outreach with the farmers on agricultural practices. Well, he sees this as a solar extension, the ability to teach both the general public and others how solar technology really works, and as a showcase of solar-made products and services. So this will be an incredible way to highlight solar's happening. It'll be right on I-40. The education center will be also function as a rest stop, so you know people can literally stop by and learn about solar. So it's going to be a very exciting. And if it manages the very aggressive timeline, we'll be up and running. Not the education center won't, but the solar array will be by December 15th of this year. So that would be very exciting. They should have just notified the people that respond for the list of qualified contractors. So I'm hoping, obviously, a Tennessee business wins that. The other element of Governor Bredesen's initiative is the Tennessee Solar Institute. Its main startup effort will be around giving grants out, both what's called innovation grants, which will include things like technical assistance and improving renewable energy products and the workforce development and kind of the supporting of the solar industry, and also straight up deployment grants, somewhat a successor of the Tennessee Clean Energy Technology Grants. It is designed overall to be very similar to the 10-cent grant that the state has been giving out, which is, I mentioned earlier, 40% for commercial systems up to $75,000. But as the guidelines for both of these grants are not yet public, I do have question marks when I started listing some of the details, because it is, of course, very possible that some of these details could change. It is supposed to be public knowledge, the details of the grants, within a month or so. They are going to be creating a website that will let people know how to apply for these, and that is supposed to be up in the next month, 6 weeks. Other planned activities outside of that for the new Tennessee Solar Institute includes the creation and maintaining a database of industry resources and contacts, conducting partner retreats, meetings, and seminars, provide on-the-ground assistance to industry partners, provide workforce certification opportunities, and cutting-edge research and demonstration. The research, our R&D, is outside of stimulus funds, so this would be hope for matching work that will be done. The stimulus funds is mainly going to be looking at the innovation grants and the deployment grants. So looking at Georgia, manufacturing, Suniva, they are outgrowth of Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech has one of the leading laboratories for researching polycrystalline solar panels. This is a commercial outgrowth of that effort outside of Atlanta. Major installations, as you can see, the largest that's up right now is the Georgia Tech Aquatic Center. That was actually built for the Olympics at 342 kW. They have started, but not completed, the Smith & Govey in Savannah, which will be a 1.2 megawatt when completed. Cox Enterprise in Atlanta is 112 kW. And you can see some others. A few places I don't mention, if you're curious about where they are, I simply say Dalton, Georgia. If they put out a press release saying they put this up, I include the information. In some cases, it's not clear whether the business or homeowner want people to know what they have on their roof, so I've tried to be discreet. So when I've known it's public, I've included it. And if you want details of the ones I can share, feel free to contact me and if these ones are your interest. We look at stimulus money for Georgia. Georgia did receive $82 million for various energy projects in the state. They have set up guidelines for some of that. I'm just actually going to jump to that. So they are looking at $4.5 million in solar projects to support. So we will be seeing very shortly, I would think, since the it has been announced, another whole group of larger solar installations. A very interesting group of people, I have to say. Like Sterling Planet is a renewable energy company, not surprised. They're putting up a large system. But then you see the Atlanta National League Baseball Club, which so it's interesting all who is adopting solar energy these days. So there will be some significant size solar going up in Georgia this year through support that $4.5 million of grants. In North Carolina, you have some serious in Charlotte as far as manufacturing. They are actually not in the crystalline panels. They are the thin film more, and they are working on cutting edge, high efficient thin film technology for their panels. Are still very much in the startup phase, but they have very aggressive plans. It's been very exciting to see a thin film manufacturer as well in the Southeast. North Carolina does have a lot of installations. I've listed some of these here. I got a couple different lists. Clearly in North Carolina, what drives the market in North Carolina is the renewable portfolio standard, which has a solar carve-out. That actually mandates that utilities have to get a certain amount of energy from renewables and increases every year. It kind of basically assures the renewable energy industry that utilities are in the market for solar and will remain in the market for solar. So the North Carolina Green Power Program, you see some of their larger systems I've listed there on the bottom left, on the bottom right. Progress Energy, meeting their renewable portfolio standard requirements, have set up some very large solar systems. Very exciting. And also GreenCo, which it helps to meet the requirements for the electric co-ops, has a new 224 kW system in Arden, North Carolina. As you can see, the systems are pretty spread out in North Carolina, so very exciting. And North Carolina has been a more advanced market than the rest of Southeast for some time. It has a stronger infrastructure than most states, most notably because they've had state income tax had a 35% credit for solar. This was actually approved about a year ago and increased in scale. So they have, between that and then the new solar carve-out, North Carolina has clearly placed themselves as a leading market and will remain a leading market in solar for some time. So they've really, as Tennessee has clearly gone after the manufacturing piece, North Carolina has clearly gone after and shown leadership in installations. Now, in stimulus money, they received $76 million in stimulus funds under the state energy program and a total of 58 in efficient conservation block grants. You can see various elements that are very supportive of solar but don't support solar directly. That's probably because there's enough activity in North Carolina already, mechanisms to promote it, that they do not have to as actively support it now between their already established policies. South Carolina, I couldn't find any major manufacturing in South Carolina on the solar front. They do have a pretty solid amount of activity as far as installations going. Biggest is 100 kW and the General Electric facility in Greenville. But, you know, a good spread out spread. They do now have a tax credit as well for solar in South Carolina. And a large number of smaller systems, but they probably don't have the funding mechanism or the RPS to drive the larger installations at this time. In South Carolina, they received $25 million of its SEP award of over $50 million. $6 million of funds in two programs. The main thing is they have a grant program. Grants total $2.8 million. Only it's for various renewable technologies. 1 to 5 will support solar. These are large awards, $15,000 to $500,000. It wasn't a percentage. It was a return on investment equation for figuring how what percentage of the grant would cover. But South Carolina will be seeing shortly a number of larger solar installations. So that is exciting. Now, Florida is an entirely different level of activity, where in South Carolina I was counting 10 kilowatts and above. In Florida, I counted 10 megawatts and above, a spectacularly different level of installation activity. They do have a ton of smaller systems going in. It was not practical to try to list all their medium-sized systems, much less their smaller systems, but wanted to give you a feel for some of the activity that is going on. They do have two manufacturers, thermal conversion technologies and alternative energy technologies. Neither of them huge, but still manufacturing is exciting and they do have that in both of them in Jacksonville. I have slides going into some of these larger systems, so I'll just go to that, but wanted to give you kind of a visual for where some of these very large, some of the largest in the nation, solar installations were going up. Here, this is actually an artist conception drawing for the Martin Solar Thermal Project. And this is very radical. This is different. This is not solar PV. This is concentrated solar power, CSP. It's a thermal technology. It is tied to and directly next to, as you can see, a natural gas power plant. It is capable of producing 75 megawatts of solar energy and is used basically, natural gas is great because you can turn it on and off pretty easily. You can ramp it up and down. So when the sun is shining and they don't need the natural gas on, they can ramp back the natural gas, thereby saving fossil fuels. It's a great and very exciting hybrid facility, and it would be a really interesting model. Potentially this would be something that a lot of other utilities will be looking at, depending on the success of the Martin Next Generation Solar Energy Center. Next is the Space Coast Next Generation Solar Energy Center. Again, this is an artist conception, but they've actually, about a megawatt of this is now up. But I want to give people a visual for what this will look like when it's completed. It is a little bit behind schedule, but it's an interesting partnership with NASA so they can leverage their engineering and design. And of course, NASA for the longest time was what drove solar technology development for the use of solar on satellites. So this is a really interesting combination of tying together at the Kennedy Space Center, large-scale solar development right there. So and obviously this is a PV technology and very exciting. You might recognize the gentleman in front of that. Solar. That's the DeSoto Next Generation Solar Energy Center. It is completed at 25 megawatts. It is the largest solar PV plant at the moment in the U.S. It has a very dynamic field, so at this point it is the largest. President Obama did go down there for the ribbon cutting, and is pretty amazing. You can see it consists of over 90,000 panels, which is pretty tremendous. So looking at how Florida is spending their stimulus money, of Florida's $126 million in state energy program funding, they are spending a fair amount in solar energy. As a pretty advanced market, it is interesting that they continue to push their leadership in solar energy, which makes sense as the Sunshine States. I won't go over that. I'm going to actually jump into an example in my next slide. For now, for more information, it is a great resource to look at the Florida Energy and Climate Commission, and Solar Energy Industry Association also has a good summary of various stimulus funds. One that really caught my attention as being a really interesting model is the $10 million that they are spending for schools. You get solar schools have been something people have been doing for a long time, and often just a 1 or 2K system that is more used for education than anything else to really, really need a load. But what Florida is doing, they're actually tying it to storm shelters. Obviously, hurricanes and severe storms, something Florida is very aware of. As a backup power, it's sort of a very practical use. It is 10 kW systems on 90 public schools. So I think that is a fantastic model to look at, and I think very exciting. Now, if you want to look at some of the things going on nationally to support solar manufacturing, there was $2.3 billion in tax credits that was announced on January 8th. Some of those were in SACE's region. As I mentioned earlier, Sharp continues to expand and grow here in Tennessee, in Memphis, Tennessee. And they are going to be putting in a new product line. Exciting that they have just continued almost every year to expand their facility as the market has grown. Suniva also in Georgia got $5 million for manufacturing their monocrystalline solar cells, which, as I said, they have the creators of that were an outgrowth of Georgia Tech and had some of the top researchers in this technology in the nation. So it's going to be interesting to see what this startup will do in a very, very dynamic solar market. Vacker here in Tennessee, they got $128 million for their polysilicon facility, which will produce roughly 10 metric tons of pure polysilicon. Very exciting, both for just the raw economic impact that is having in Tennessee, but also because this raw polysilicon is the root of solar manufacturing for solar panels, it is places Tennessee in our region an excellent place to become a manufacturing leader for other solar module makers in addition to Sharp, which I hope to be seeing in Tennessee. There are some other additional things that were notes. These are some things that were noted in the 2009 updates and trends. The Interstate Renewable Energy Council, as I mentioned, is a fantastic resource for those of us tracking solar. We've had them down here to help with trainings with the Maxwell Solar America Cities Program, with our code officials, and they put out a host of different reports, all extremely useful. So we looked at, nationally, five states put in new programs to support, manufacturing. Not surprising, Tennessee and Louisiana were both southeast states, but Tennessee, the reason that they, of course, been landing a lot of this new manufacturing is they have put in very lucrative incentives for the clean energy industry in particular. and they've gone after solar in particular for those credits. So it's very intentional and part of a very strong effort. Also of note on this late report of updated trends that IRAC put out was TVA approving their generation partners incentive, went from a straight 15 cents to 12 cents above the retail price, which is 22 cents. That establishes a set price that's very lucrative, comparable to other places, and of course notably increased the size up to a megawatt. That basically acts as a feed-in tariff for smaller systems, which is something that is Europe has been doing for some time, a set price of buying power, and there literally is a feed-in tariff now in Gainesville at 26 cents to 32 cents, depending on whether it's roof-mounted or ground-mounted. So even more lucrative and a little better resource, solar resource-wise. So Gainesville has gained a lot of national and international attention for this feed-in tariff. It is truly the cutting edge of how to look at the most effective tools for promoting this market. So both of those three things, the states going after the renewable energy manufacturers very aggressively, the TVA expanding their Generation Partners program, and Gainesville's feed-in tariff, especially probably feed-in tariff, were three recent things to note outside of the stimulus funds. Now, let's look at a little more in depth on some of the policies that have been promoting this growth. You can look at the tax credits for renewables. I already mentioned that North Carolina had a long-established tax credit for renewables that has really helped them establish a deep infrastructure in solar installations. South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida for corporate entities now all have tax credits in the Southeast. So that would probably be the most common now program that is out there, incentive in the Southeast. So and definitely having a mark helping grow the industry. Direct cash incentives are also very much appreciated. In fact, I'd say the solar industry loves that, but it's relatively rare. Often used in Tennessee, I know the 10-cent grant, Tennessee Clean Energy Technology Grant, where used direct cash incentives basically because there was no industry here and needed a kickstart and nothing like actual checks to kickstart the industry. Well, the program has kind of had ups and downs on effectiveness of management. It has definitely kickstarted industry here in Tennessee. As you see, Florida also has direct cash incentives available. I also had mentioned to look at, you know, North Carolina is the only state in the Southeast with renewable portfolio standards. Nationally, 29 states have renewable portfolio standards and the District of Columbia, which promote renewables. This is particularly looking at RPS policies, renewable portfolio standards, that promote solar directly. See, North Carolina does have a direct solar carve-out. Not as aggressive as some markets, but still definitely enough to make the utilities engage in solar development. So that's probably clearly the most effective tool for getting utilities to start doing solar is a renewable portfolio standard. It's definitely very effective in North Carolina. Net metering, been a lot of change on this slide the last couple of years as a lot of states enact net metering policies. Of course, net metering policies vary. If you look at different grades of lowering the barriers, whether they, you know, require, and I'm not going to go too much into net metering, but do they require a lockable disconnect? Well, that's not considered needed with modern systems, but, you know, how do they handle insurance? Especially for smaller systems, you know, additional insurance should not be necessary. Regular homeowner insurance is fine. It should be treated like any other appliance is treated on a home. various issues like that are critical for net metering. So I'm going to pull out Florida here. Florida, as far as rated by the Interstate Renewable Energy Council for the effectiveness of their net metering policies, went from an F to an A in this past year. So that is very noticeable. And hats off to Florida. Again, strong leadership. It's not just about incentivizing. It's about lowering the barriers that in many cases keep solar from going up. And Florida has clearly gone after that very aggressively. I do want to just mention some of those resources that I'm mentioning. The North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners certifies installers. If any of you are interested on a personal level of putting up solar, either in a home, a commercial setting, or scale, I would definitely work with NAPCEP certified installers. You can see in your state who is certified by going to NAPCEP.org. The link is right there. The Interstate Renewable Energy Council, we're tracking trends and looking at best practices, is probably the best resource in the nation. The Database for Solar Energy Efficiency Incentives, the DesireUSA.org website. The U.S. Department's Energy Renewable Energy website is a great place for learning more about the technology, as is the National Renewable Energy Laboratory. Here in the southeast, the Oak Ridge National Laboratory has been engaging in renewables and solar a lot more, so it's exciting to have a national lab that is starting to play in this field here, a great regional resource. The U.S. Green Building Council, of course, you should always tie in efficiency and sustainability with solar. So in looking at a roof-mounted system, it is great to tie into the local U.S. Green Building Council chapter. Solar Energy Industry Association, again, if you're looking at what companies that you want to deal with in the solar industry, it's always good to see who belongs to the National Association. They're also a great resource on a host of different fronts. Of course, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, your host today, promotes clean energy and the solutions for global warming, and are also a great resource for this energy, for solar energy. And Find Solar is also another way to find solar installers. But that's more of a Western resource. I don't see as many of our local installers on that. Before opening up questions, I would like to say feel free that for solar energy, if you have questions or requests, to contact me. My cell phone, email, and our website is right there. And feel free to let me know what you think. And with that, I am going to open up the line and take questions. Open up the line. Any questions that you'd like to bring up during this webinar?
Hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Will this slide presentation, which was excellent, by the way, be available on your website? When?
Yes, it will. It will be up on the website. And if you go to energy.org website, you will see some resources that way. And I was finding it. I'm not exactly sure exactly where it's going to be. You'll see the resources list, but feel free to email me if you have any trouble finding it. It'll probably be a few days before it's up. So, but if you want to refer to it in a week or so, it should be up. Other questions?
I have a quick question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I noticed that for Florida on the Desire website, it said that the state is still going to provide rebates for PV, but I've heard that they were going to end that program because the state is out of money. So do you know exactly what's going on with PV in Florida, or the rebates in Florida?
Well, this slide refers to stimulus funding, which is probably outside the traditional money. So it is focused. And I'm not, I have contacts in Florida, but I don't track that market as close as I do other markets. So not familiar with the future. Now, you see there is $14 million set aside solar stimulus for rebate program. So I would think at least during the stimulus funding period, which is just what, half years left, there should at least be $14 million available through stimulus funds. What's happening in some states, unfortunately, is state programs are being halted to save state money while they use stimulus funds and using federal government's money instead for their rebate grant programs. I don't know if that's the case in Florida. Check that with our Energy Center, which is another great resource. Some of our staff in Florida to see what the status of the send me an email. I can check that for you.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Regarding the work in Tennessee, I've been they seem to be very successful in securing manufacturing for the state. Would you that what's the biggest issue that you attribute that to? Is it the economic development, supply chain analysis that supported that, or what?
I think there's a couple elements there. Last year, I guess it'll be about a year and a half ago now, the governor created an energy task force that kind of looked for opportunities, and out of that, they created recommendations that created both the Tennessee Clean Energy Futures Act and another piece of legislation that created some manufacturing credits and incentives. And you can actually check those out, get a whole presentation on those from State of Tennessee Economic and Community Development Office. It's called their Green Energy Tool Shed that shows you their various incentives. But they've also, instead they brought in national experts to meet with the governor. The governor himself, Governor Bredesen, facilitated those meetings. Our SACES board chair, John Noll, was on there, as well as representations from Oak Ridge National Laboratory and other national and regional experts. And he didn't just create incentives. His office and Matt Kisburn in Economic and Community Development clearly was very focused on the needs that, seeing the opportunity that was there. These companies were going to locate, they were going to bring billions of dollars in, jobs, and he went after very aggressively, very focused. I have heard, I work with industry pretty closely, and they like to go where they are welcomed and supported. I think that's part of the reason why Governor Bredesen also created something that doesn't go to the industry but shows the local support with the UT Solar Institute, being a hands-on place that could work with them. The fact that Oak Ridge National Laboratory was here really helped having a national laboratory. Confluent Solar mentioned that in particular, the fact that they were locating at a place that already had manufacturing established that was working here and happy to be here, that they were going to be Oak Ridge National Laboratory and Confluent and the UT Solar Institute was here. So it feeds on help.
Hello?
Any other questions?
I just wanted to ask you if you know it's feasible to use an existing gas-fired system in collaboration with solar, where the solar, when the solar becomes and has adequate energy, the solar takes over the system.
You mean like a hybrid system? Yet you can definitely combine large-scale solar. Well, actually, I should say it's expected that you can But, you know, we're just getting real live experience with that now, the ability to have hybrid systems. I won't claim to be an expert in that area. Most of my expertise is in market transformation, lowering the barriers, if you will, and helping grow industry. And there are some very technical challenges to that. I can connect you to some people I know that can probably address that better. And there was a lady who was also asking a question. I don't want to – what was your question?
Oh, yes. I was just wondering, we talked about the renewable energy credits in North Carolina, and I just wondered what – if you've heard much about the possibilities for a federal renewable energy credit standard and how that would change things.
Well, it dramatically changed things. You know, if there it had been talked for some years – of the federal government passing a national renewable portfolio standard, under obviously how things are worked out in detail, you know, is up to be seen. But if they do that, 30 states already have it, so there's a lot of impetus to do that. It would create a national market for renewable energy credits, as utilities have to be getting these credits, whether they're doing it themselves or buying from others. And it would be tremendous because, to be honest, industry hates that they have to do something different in every other place. A national market would really help, especially the larger companies, but it makes everything simpler. It would probably be better. But, again, you know, until legislation actually passes, you know, the devil's in the details. I think a national renewable energy portfolio standard, very helpful to the industry. The industry very much wants it. But, you know, renewable portfolio standard to help solar either has to have a carve-out. In some state cases, they actually triple-count solar because cheaper resources like wind power, which Southeast has, but it's very either site-specific or it's offshore. Which has its own challenges in the Southeast, or biomass is often cheaper. But it would definitely, policies like that are very definitely helpful to the industry. Other questions?
Gil, have you projected for the 2015 the impact on electric rates, in particular in those states that have renewable portfolio standards? I'm in North Carolina, where it's putting at the solar PV impact on utility rates. Is that being looked at by your group?
I'd have to. John Wilson is our R&D person, did most of our research. The way that we're doing that, I do read various Global Energy Laboratory and stuff puts out. With renewables in general, what you see is a higher cost to create, but then because there is no fuel cost associated with it, you create price sustainability. So the long-term cost of these things are often very positive. It somewhat depends on whether the utility owns them or not. Traditionally, they would support them and not own them. If they own a power plant, if you own a power plant, you sell the power, you're basically getting your money back. If solar, if there's somebody paying others to build it and they're not taking advantage of ownership themselves, it can be very positive long term. It can be negative in the short term, but it's only positive if they actually own the resources. So there's a lot of complexity involved. I do see utilities in the past year really starting to buy these things themselves as they start doing some of the rate analysis. Now, so the price of solar is coming down pretty substantially, and it is expected to, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, be as cheap as anything else. So in the short term, it could have a push up the price. The long term would probably lower the price just after you pay for continued costs.
And in particular for utilities, if they own that, that goes into their rate structure as investment, which allows them to get more return on their investment, but it also then builds into the rate structure. But you mentioned an individual in your group that was more knowledgeable on this?
Yes, his name is John Wilson. If you email me at gill@cleanenergy.org, I would be happy to connect you with him.
Great. Thank you.
Other questions?
Well, Gil, this is John Atkins. A little bit more on the Florida program. The governor apparently announced a $2.1 billion program the other day, of which it looks like about $40 million is for solar directly, and maybe another $40 million where solar might qualify for assistance. So Florida is getting very aggressive.
Yeah, no, clearly Florida, but they've been Florida and North Carolina have been the leading states for solar in the Southeast by far for some time, and Florida has taken it to a new level. Both the individual utilities, Jacksonville Electric, Gainesville, and FPNL, Florida Power and Light, all have tremendous programs going on. They're all very exciting. We could definitely probably spend a couple webinars simply looking at what each utility is doing in Florida. It's tremendous. And clearly the governor down there, Governor Chris, is pushing that to happen. There's nothing like leadership to make, because we're changing how things are done, how people use and consume energy, and to do that, you need somebody that's steering the ship in that direction.
How is New Jersey number two? What are they doing different?
They have incredible, in fact, I would almost say they incentivize too well, because they have incredibly juicy rebates available that are very favorable, they have again just shown leadership in that direction. They have pushed their base. And if you want to look at the individual incentives, it's at the Desire website. You can click the New Jersey and see the details of all their grants.
I have another question related to Florida, but it's actually more general.
Sure.
We know the problem in Florida that we have the utilities have incentives to build capital. They make capital investments. We don't have a lot of incentive here for decentralized. My general question is sort of megawatt for megawatt. What is the relative loss in efficiency by doing centralized solar, which many of the big utilities are doing, versus decentralized, like rooftop solar?
So that's a great question. I mean, one of the traditional best benefits of solar energy was it was used where the power was needed. It was literally on the rooftop feeding in. So obviously, while you had some loss from going from the DC to the AC in your inverter, which your appliance is like alternating current that comes off the grid, you had no line loss. It was very efficient. Anytime you're getting farther away from load, you start having loss.
Right, exactly. That's my question. But we have to bring the legislature up to speed sooner than later on the kind of inefficiency in cost. The Public Service Commission seems to be really listening to us and understanding that people want renewables, but what I don't hear them really screaming for is decentralized renewables.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I was just wondering if there was some kind of a number out there, and I know it has to do with miles and it has to do with the kinds of lines you put up and all of that, but, say they put up there was one development they were planning on powering the development with a central solar facility, PV. What would the difference, if it was, say, just within a mile or two, be of doing it central versus rooftop?
Yeah, I mean, if it's just a mile or two, it's probably not too bad. You know, there is a rule of thumb, and I can't remember the number off the top of my head. So
if I can comment on that, I read that the line losses are about 25%, and I don't know what distances those involve, but I think one of the more critical aspects of distributed energy for anything other than a small residential system is the use of third-party finance, which is common everywhere outside the Southeast. As you know, we continue to work on third-party financing, and we can offer that now in quite a variety of situations. But until that's embraced by various states, the Southeast will continue to lag, I believe. Now, Florida in particular has a difficult situation for third-party finance in that not only can you not sell power in Florida unless you're a registered utility, you cannot provide the equipment for people to generate their own and finance that equipment. So it is left to direct purchasing, which is a means of buying solar that is dropping off dramatically across the country. So the Florida legislature needs to recognize the importance of third-party finance.
No, that's a good question. Go back to the original question, though. There is a mile loss number, and I don't have it in front of me. I'd have to track that down. If you'd like to email me at gill@cleanenergy.org with that question, I'd be more than happy to send that back to you, the exact number, because it does vary tremendously.
Yeah, I kind of think the number the legislators need to hear is how much are the ratepayers funding when they pay the utilities to build a central solar plant if they do approve cost recovery for renewables versus how much would the ratepayer pay if they put their own rooftop solar on? It's a very, very simple question, really, and it would be great to have a number to run around Tallahassee with.
Sure. And there are benefits to both. I think, like a lot of things, it's all about balance. I do think you want your utilities, because they're going to own, coal and nuclear, and you want them owning solar, too, especially in places where, they have property. A big part of large-scale solar is you have to have two property. Utilities often own large tracts of underused property that they have to keep clear for various reasons. So I am very supportive of utility-owned solar, but at the same time, there are real benefits to more distributed energy as well, and you would like your Public Service Commission to be making sure that there's a well-rounded effort that encourages both. Any other questions here before we're getting towards the end of the set period here, but I'd be happy to do my best to address any other questions.
I have one more question. This is the Florida person again. What is your assessment of the technical potential study in terms of its accuracy that was done for the Public Service Commission? They analyzed the technical potential, and they included, great giant numbers for offshore wind and some lower numbers for onshore wind and some pretty good numbers for solar. PV.
Yep. I haven't looked at that one directly myself. In Tennessee, I do things. I know John Wilson, probably our research director, has looked at that more in depth. Clearly, the biggest source of in the Southeast for renewables is offshore wind. You're talking about potentially hundreds of gigawatts of renewable energy. Offshore wind produces better during peak daytime hours compared to onshore wind, and so it's hard to show any numbers that don't show offshore wind as being the number one renewable energy resource. Clearly, solar is incredible resource, especially if we start, it's very important how buildings and homes are built, depending on their solar resource, both for efficiency and simply to make sure so many roofs these days, it's getting a little bit into the bug dust, are little things sticking up everywhere. Very difficult not to have shading issues, even if you don't have trees. We need to start looking right from scratch, from the construction to make them solar ready, really start maximizing solar potential of all our rooftops. Solar doesn't blow all the, solar doesn't shine, the sun doesn't shine all the time for solar, the wind doesn't blow all the time. You always need a portfolio of resources, you never want to throw all your eggs in one basket because that's always dangerous. So you want a wide range of resources that includes solar and wind and bioenergy and potentially, ocean energy and other sources.
Gil, are you tied into what is going on in the southeast in battery and other storage device activity from a manufacturing standpoint?
I tracked that a little bit. I mainly, because I'm involved in market transformation, and there's so much going on, try to focus on what is commercial today and what's actually being put up. There's so much R&D and testing, the entire supply chain. Clearly, energy storage is huge. You look at hybrid energy storage, like the various technologies. There are lots of different elements to it, I focus for the most part on what's commercially available today. But is there a particular question as far as some of the energy storage questions or things that are going on?
I'm sorry, were you asking me a question?
I guess clarifying the question. Was there particularly something as far as energy storage that you had a question on?
Well, it's when you look at the supply chain issues for PV and wind, one of the elements that would possibly be a economic opportunity for the region would be in the manufacturing of energy storage devices.
Long term, I agree with you. Research shows that you can have up to 25 to 30% solar before storage becomes a huge issue. We are so far from that that it's not a big issue. Solar generally generates close to peak, which is when utilities want the energy. So while long-term storage is huge, it really isn't the drivers where I see large-scale storage really happening outside of potentially large utility scale. But even for that, there's really not the driving force to push that way at this time. I have to admit, in my opinion, I mainly see energy storage as R&D and pilot phase for the next decade or two. I don't really expect, in my opinion, I don't really see large-scale storage commercializing for another 15, 20 years, just because they don't need to, and people are not going to invest. Utilities are not going to invest in it until the grid demands it. Now, there's a ton of changes going on as far as the grid today with all the different smart grid applications, and clearly energy storage and smart grid really connect very powerfully. Clearly the people working on smart grids would love to have energy storage capacity on the grid. Of course, a lot of people looking at plug-in hybrid vehicles or just plug-in vehicles, period, as having potential that way, but there's also challenges for the grid with plug-in vehicles. So...
Thank you.
I do. We are, I think we're going to finish up here today. Anybody with additional questions or thoughts and want to email me or give me a call, more than happy to chat with people and talk. It is a very dynamic and incredibly exciting time for solar energy. I really want to thank you for attending today. We're very excited by this solar energy and about the webinar series that we're doing. And hope everybody enjoyed January's webinar. And thank you for all the great questions. Obviously, a lot of interest among the participants. And thank you again for attending, and look forward to talking with everybody another time.
Thanks, Gil.